Without warning, a hand grasped Chell's shoulder and pulled him. It was Scholar Trem, standing next to that thick, gleaming root running the length of a stone wall, while the stonework of the root chamber blurred into the structure of the ship's bridge.
"You must bring the eyes to the seed-pot of battle, Chelluvahar," Trem said, regarding him with a piercing gaze. "Bring them from beneath the mountain."
Then, abruptly, he was back on the branchway, standing before the Vudron in which Rory dreamed true visions.
"When he awakes," Chell told the unburdener sentry, "tell him that I know it was no dream."
With that, he left, heading down the main trunk spiral steps to a rope gantry that would take him back towards that southward ravine. To the south were the Kentigerns and Tusk Mountain, within which lay the Hall of Discourse and the Sentinel. Instinct mingled with his seer talents and said, "This is where you must go. Now." Chapter 16. Teo. It was well into the night when the first survivors of the Mech ambush arrived back at Tusk Mountain. An exhausted handful of men, carrying two seriously wounded, one of them a Tigran, both needing immediate attention. Solveig and her son Ian volunteered to help, and Teo was happy to accept the offer, hoping that by keeping them busy their minds would not dwell so much on Greg's absence. When the three of them had returned from the stony wooded vale where Teo's unsuccessful assassin now lay dead, it was to a Tusk Mountain base rife with rumour and torn by argument. Earlier, the Tigran squad left behind by Gideon had picked up a brief signal from their ship, the Starfire, saying that Greg Cameron was unable to leave the ship due to enemy action. When the Tigrans also began to overhear fragmentary battle communications from near space, this provoked dark, wild speculation throughout the corridors. Then, a garbled message had been received from Gideon's comm officer, who said they were under attack moments before he suddenly shrieked in agony and the signal went dead. This turned the prevalent uneasy speculation into a mood barely short of panic. Teo was quick to impose authority and calm, backed by his remaining diehards. Everyone had to calm down, steady their nerves and their resolve, and to be ready for when the wounded started arriving. Despite some muttering, the personal tack seemed to work, and the panic subsided. As he watched his sister and his nephew help stretcher the injured along to the sickbay, he thought again about their tense, cheerless mood, reasoning that Ned's death must have had a tragic element. Perhaps he should have been somewhere else when the boatyard went up, or some chance event had led him to the wrong place at the wrong time. Certainly, he had witnessed enough incredible coincidences to half believe that the machinery of the cosmos had a black irony setting, which inflicted random synchronicities on hapless thinking beings and left them to rise or fall by their consequences. Teo preferred that to the ethos of a watching activist deity, be it Odin or the Christian god. Any god that would deliberately inflict suffering didn't deserve praise in his view. Less than an hour later, Captain Gideon arrived with most of the raiding party survivors, of whom a third were walking wounded. But no Vashutkin.
"I don't know what happened to him," the Tigran said as they went with the injured to sickbay.